Hoops, there it is.
Yeah.
Mayor John Hamilton, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine. Nice to be with you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New
Year. Here we go.
I can hear the ball bouncing in the background. You're excited for the NCAA tournament. To use Simon Scott Assembly Hall as one of their six. Well, how did I read this last hour, Keith? There's going to be six sites, four of them in Indianapolis, one in Mackey Arena in West Lafayette, and one here in Bloomington. Did they reach out to you, or did they just slide that underneath the door and say, here you go?
Well, we've known that was in the offing. We're glad to see it officially announced, and we've been talking about it a little bit. It's exciting. It's important that it be done well, and the NCAA. We're confident we'll do that. It's good for Bloomington to be one of the host sites. It's not like we're going to get to all knock on the door and walk into Simon Scott Hall. That's not how that's going to work. I expect it will be very, very restricted audience members, and I think we probably expect that all of the teams will be sequestered up in the Indianapolis area. Don't know that for sure. But, look, it's really a nice feather in Indiana's cap overall, and we're part of that, to have the whole NCAA tournament played here over a period of weeks or days, you know.
And knock on black lumber, Mayor Hamilton, that we can make this happen. I know that is in March. We know the selection show is penned for the 14th, that Sunday. And we just hope we can make all this happen and figure out all the details on the flip side. I understand why they want to have the bubble in Indianapolis per se, but if you're going to have teams in Bloomington, I was kind of hoping, part of me was, that that would help out our local hoteliers in some way, shape, or form if you had four or six teams or eight teams staying here in Bloomington. But we don't know all the details yet. Maybe that does happen down the road. I'm not sure on that, but you're right. It is exciting, and we have to keep our friend the old COVID away. I don't know if you heard there at the top of the hour, the Grammys in Los Angeles have now been postponed to March because the numbers are growing too high. So,
oh boy, no, I didn't hear that. Yeah,
it's all around us.
It's tough, and let me be clear. You know, we hope the Indiana Hoosiers get to play in this venue. Wouldn't that be fun? And it would be great to have teams here. I know they're going to be focused on how do you get the players in, keep them safe, keep them all isolated and not interacting with each other more than they do on the basketball court. So it'll be interesting how they work it out. But you know, the NBA finals, they did that whole tournament very well, it seemed like.
And yeah, in Orlando.
We were at, you know, the Hoosiers were at the Maui Classic in North Carolina this year, and that worked very well. So, you know, I hope they'll figure that out. Yeah, look, COVID is, it's on the one hand, we have vaccinations with shots going into arms, over 500 a day is the latest information I've gotten, are getting vaccinated here at IU Health. And that's great as we chip away at this. But on the other hand, the numbers are continuing to be really scary for all of us. Seeing what's happening in Los Angeles is cataclysmic, and seeing our numbers, you know, we still have much better numbers than the state average or the national average here in Monroe County, but it's very concerning, and it's going to take a while for the vaccines to have much impact at all, and you know, making sure we keep getting the vaccines delivered. And I can share what numbers I know from last week, and making sure we get shots in the arm is critical.
And the other part of that, Mr. Mayor, is do we have enough people to administer these shots? We've heard that's been a problem statewide, countrywide, and everywhere else.
Yeah, I'll find out. You know, I have my weekly meeting tomorrow with the health leadership, and I'll get more, and we'll have our regular Friday press conferences happening in the afternoon each week at 1:15, where we'll share that. But I expect what you'll see is kind of those thermometer charts that'll show you how many vaccines doses have been delivered locally, how many have been administered into arms. And every week we want to report on that. Wherever there's a bottleneck or a problem, if it's in personnel to deliver shots, if it's in numbers of vaccines being delivered, we just want to be really transparent about that. I feel very strongly that we just need to let everybody know what's happening. This community's been terrific in collaborating and working hard to get through this. I haven't directly heard a concern about personnel here yet, but, you know, we haven't started a lot of the more complicated vaccine deliveries that right now it's really happening at the hospital, basically, here. And they're also doing shots in Paoli in Orange County. And but we need to be moving in this month. We expect we'll be starting to see kind of similar to the flu shots where you know, you may be able to go to a CVS or we'll be delivering them to on site to long-term care facilities and that kind of thing. But we'll report on that. We had 3,000 plus vaccines delivered into arms by December 30th, so last Wednesday. We'll get another set of numbers that we'll share at the end of this week. That'll be really important to see how we're doing. From what I know, as I mentioned, a little over 500 a day vaccinations are being delivered at the hospital, which is good, but we want to keep cranking that up overall in the community.
Mayor John Hamilton's our guest this afternoon. There's a little breaking news from the world of college football. Because of COVID issues at Ohio State, there has been discussions about postponing the college football playoff title game to January 18th. Sources are telling their sources, and people are putting this on Twitter. So we'll keep an eye on that. It's scheduled for next Monday. The other news that's making news, I've seen in the Boston Globe, in the New York Times, maybe in the San Francisco Chronicle as well, there's a super strain or a different strain that's going around. Do you expect that you're meeting tomorrow to hear anything about that here, or are you hoping we don't have to deal with that yet or ever?
Yeah, I've been following that a little bit. As I understand it, it's actually estimated that it is probably here in the United States. We know it's here in several states in the United States, but I think what I'm hearing is that often you don't find it till you really look for it and search for it and do the deep analysis to find it, that it may be here more than we know. And so I'm very concerned about it. You've seen some of the charts I've seen, I guess, of UK and South Africa and how it's accelerated the cases. And I want to make one point that I haven't heard much in the news that mentions that, you know, they say this strain is more communicable, but it seems it's not more deadly. It's not more difficult in terms of the disease you get. Or the effectiveness of the vaccines, which we hope is true. But listen, the basic point is, if more people get sick, more people are going to die, and more people are going to go to the hospital. Even if it's individually not more threatening to you in terms of your mortality or morbidity, if more of us get it because it's more communicable, that's the same thing as having a strain that's more deadly come, you know, because it's going to hit more of us. So it's very concerning. And it just reminds us how important it is to keep doing the things we do to protect each other with masking and distancing, et cetera.
You're listening to the mayor of the city of Bloomington, John Hamilton. And Mr. Mayor, the news media this morning was reporting that this, what you were referring to, this new strain, there's also already been a third mutation of the strain. And that the issue is the faster they can get the immunization into the arms of people, the more they'll have the ability to control this. And it's one of those things that, you know, what you're talking about is getting those shots in people, and that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, look, I don't think we should get distracted from this. Mutations, I'm not an epidemiologist, but they're very common and expected. And our focus should be on two main things. I think one is continuing to do the things that protect us from the communication of this disease, the spread of the disease, doing this basic masking, distancing, washing hands. Don't go to work if you're sick. Don't share air if you don't have to. And then the second thing is doing all we can to maximize the speed of getting the vaccines into our population. And that's what we should focus on. That's what we can most control. And I think if we stick to that, we have our best chance of getting through this pandemic, which we will, and doing it as quickly and safely as we can.
Mr. Mayor, one of the things that's going on, you've probably heard this, state legislature, some people are talking about they're angry at the governor for some of the restrictions he's put in place, and they're talking about legislation that would make it locally, the local elected officials, that would be the mayor and the county officials, could override the health department rules and regulations if they felt that that was worthy, and that then becomes override what the governor says. How do you feel about, you know, your authority in these kinds of things?
Well, thanks. Let me make two points about that. I think first, let me give credit to the governor that our governor allowed local jurisdictions all across the state to take tailor our controls in ways that were tighter than what the state did. You couldn't loosen them, but you could do things if you felt were appropriate for a community. And that wasn't true across the country, and it was true here. And I appreciated that, and it was important and helpful. So that's one point. And I don't think anything should be done to reduce the flexibility for that locally. I think the second point, I'll tell you what I wish the legislature would focus on. I think the authorities are there. I think we've done a really good job of collaborating with our public health officials and working together. What I wish the legislature would focus on is remedying the fact that Indiana has among the lowest investment in public health infrastructure in the country. We're 49th or 50th per capita investment in our public health system. And that really shows. We're very lucky in this community to have the kind of capacity with a major hospital, a major university, and all the expertise that brings. But man, across the state, the public health infrastructure just isn't strong enough. And that's what I wish the legislature would focus on and getting some more resources out to people to build that up rather than trying to tinker or tweak some of these niceties, which I think have worked okay. We're working together fine.
I prefer the medical experts to provide medical information and the political experts to provide political information. But I don't know. I don't know. You know, where do I get these crazy ideas, right? That's a tough one for me. But the good news is I think the more you talk about anything, Mayor Hamilton, whether you agree with it or not, you can maybe find a different way to do business and make things happen and get things moving in the right direction. But you're right. Who points up to that chart and says, hey, look, we're 50 out of 51. This is great. Let's keep doing this. Well, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be some push one of the ways to finance it can be with a tobacco tax that's been looked at. There's a lot of benefits to increasing the cost of tobacco. It's certainly been done over many years. It tends to lower usage. Indiana is still a high tobacco usage state relative to the country. We have young people, and that's one of the things a tax best does is reduce entry into smoking for younger people. And if you could use that to beef up our public health system and make sure we did better to prevent, you know, our public health outcomes are overall not very good in Indiana compared to a lot of places. And again, we're very fortunate in Bloomington to have a lot of the resources we do. But I don't know the details of the legislation, so I should probably leave my comments at that high level.
We'll blame Keith for bringing it up. That's right. Hey, Keith, what if everybody stopped drinking and smoking and driving a car? We'd have no tax revenue. Then what would we do? Well, property tax would be through the roof. Mayor John Hamilton's our guest. He puts up with us every Tuesday afternoon to get us smarter and give us the inside track on what's happening here locally and some bigger picture items, obviously. And we saw today press release put out that the City of Bloomington Utilities is going to be, Keith, requesting a new water rate.
That's right.
Let's get into the details of this, Mayor Hamilton. We've heard you talk about it before. Where are we in the process now and what's next?
Well, thanks. Our City of Bloomington Utilities runs the water system. It provides the drinking water for all of us, including a whole region out of Lake Monroe. It collects the wastewater from all these areas and processes it, cleans it up, and it also manages stormwater. So those three things. And it's obviously critically important for us to do well. And in the water area, that is the drinking water area, one of the things we try to do is every 4 years, this whole utility is paid for solely by the ratepayers, by the water users. And every 4 years, we review the rates and see what needs to be done. And that's happening. It actually was supposed to happen this year, but because of COVID, it was pushed back a year, basically. And let me give you a sense. They have to deal with inflation and costs of labor and costs of supplies and all that stuff that evolve over usually rise over 4 years. But here's the thing we found out. Water mains, so those are the pipes that take water from the water plant to your house or to your business or to the restaurant or whatever. Water mains at best have a 100-year life cycle. That's a long time going into the ground and building the water main. We've seen water mains breaking more frequently. And with the current rate system that we have, we are on schedule to replace our water mains every 220 years. So you can do the math. Uh-huh. That's not a good situation, and it's why we need to. That's one of the things that this rate increase will do. It's about a 12% increase, I think, proposed for the first phase over 4 years, you know, less than 3%. And then there's another less than 10% 2 years after that to try to make up both the costs and also improve our ability to replace the mains in a good cycle. One other aspect to it. But go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, the last thing I would say is it's also been a long time, many years, since we've done what's called a cost of service study to try to make sure that the different users of water, whether you're a home, whether you're a big factory, whether you're a commercial office building, whether you're a university or whether it's for an irrigation or different, that the different classes of users are paying their fair share. That is, how much does it cost to deliver water to a home versus how much does it cost to deliver it to a big wholesale customer? And we did that study, and we found out that the homeowners, the residences, are actually cross-subsidizing the other users. So we're going to be remedying that over a period of time to make sure that nobody's cross-subsidizing anybody else. And that'll actually relatively benefit most residents, and it's going to cost a little more for some of the institutions that use the water system.
Oh, it's only fair. That's how it.
That's what we think, and that's what actually the law requires. That so.
Oh, good.
We had to do this study to say, look, you're not supposed to have cross subsidy happening. So that'll be tweaked in this whole process as well. It'll go through city council in a few months.
Now, when you're talking about large 100-year infrastructure issues like we're talking about here, do you do this as preventative medicine, or are you doing this because of the results, as you've seen with the lines breaking? Because nobody knows the pipes last for 100 years. That's kind of what we figure, but here we are. So right. Are you trying to get ahead right. of this? Is that the way to look at it because of what you've seen?
You really do both. I mean, obviously when you have a water break, you fix it and you fix it. But typically you're only repairing the broken part. You're not replacing the whole line at that time. And ductile iron line, maybe, 800 feet long or 200 feet in this area or whatever. And if there's a weak spot that broke, you go in and you fix that 8-foot section when you dig it up. But what we really need to be doing, and the data that we have, is looking at where are the breaks happening, what kind of lines are they happening in, and looking at the age of these lines and doing a regular water main replacement schedule. We do that. We're doing that now. Unfortunately, we're doing it on a 220-year cycle, and that's not gonna fly. We're just going to get too many breaks, we know. So you do both at the same time, and this will help, respond to the emergency breaks, but also do a regular upkeep, just like you don't necessarily wait till your roof leaks to replace your roof. A leak can tell you're having problems, but you replace the whole roof when it's time,
And it's a little bit more complicated than just putting some of that Flex Seal that you see on TV there over the cracked part and that stops. That's not how this works. You got to dig out the dirt. You've got labor. You've got trenches to do. You've got pieces to replace and do all that. It's not as simple as I don't know, a simpleton like me would think it is.
Well, I'll ask him about that Flex boat that we can get and see on the commercial.
You watch the same commercials I do. I like that.
It's important to remember, if we had a problem with water, with the water system, that hits people not in days, it hits people in hours. If we don't have healthy water delivered to our 85,000 city residents, 150,000 county residents, and, a couple hundred thousand in the region, we've got to have a system that can deliver safe water.
And you can't go anywhere else to get it. You can't say, well, no. I don't like how the way the city handles this. I'm going to go buy some private water. It doesn't work that way.
No. And, if you had to truck in enough water for people because something happened here, the logistics are kind of overwhelming. So really taking care. I'm really proud of the CBU people. They're very focused. They're very professional engineers, scientists, and trying to make sure we protect this system for the long haul for our community is the right thing to do. And that's what we're going to be presenting to the city council in the months ahead.
We're talking to the mayor of the city of Bloomington, John Hamilton. And Mayor Hamilton, one of the things I've heard you talk about in the past is sometimes we wait 10 years when in fact you ought to wait maybe 3 years and raise the price. And when you wait 10 years, it's pretty dramatic. How are you doing on your kind of getting things down to there'll be smaller increases, maybe a little more frequently than a large increase in a crisis situation?
Well, I think we're making progress. You know, the CBU is trying to go onto a 4-year cycle, 4 years for water, and then an offset 4-year cycle for the wastewater system, because we don't want any big bumps. And I think we're getting that lined up well. COVID threw us off 1 year, but that should be okay. You know, we've done a really good job, I think, of replacing some of our other infrastructure, big vehicles like fire trucks and major vehicles that we've needed. We're in a better position. Our transit system is doing an excellent job of improving and replacing. They're actually kind of moving towards some of the more sustainable vehicles as well. You know, we still have some issues. Sidewalks, I would say we're not on a good cycle yet with those, to keep up with those. We're expanding the trail system, but taking care of our parks, taking care of our infrastructure. I know you don't want to hear this, but I do think we're the lowest income tax, which is kind of the only flexibility we have, because all the property tax rates are set and fixed. The only flexibility we have is income tax. And we're among the lowest in the 20 county area all around us in terms of income taxes. And I do think, as I said last year and even late in the year, I said, I think our basic infrastructure and approaches are going to need some more investments in the years ahead. That's not a crisis at the moment, but I do think for a community with high ambitions and high expectations, you know, there's no free lunch. And, my job is to make sure we're as efficient as we can be with everything that we have. And we're working hard to do that and always welcome ideas, but to also let people know if I think, look, you know, if we want great parks and if we want great streets and sidewalks and we want great water systems and we want great public safety, we got to invest in it. So that's my job, to keep trying to move us forward that way.
You had some reports of good news coming about what you're learning in the treatment of the waste treatment plant, and with the Notre Dame plan of what is going on to test to see about COVID. Now I understand they can even test to see if flu virus is in the waste that's out there. That's got to be a bright spot in what Bloomington's doing.
Well, that's another example. It is helpful to be able to do this kind of system-wide testing for where the virus shows up. And we probably don't want to go into the details in a family afternoon show about, you know, how you do all that.
Right.
In the wastewater pipes coming out of dorms and neighborhoods. But we can find the science can find the residues of the virus. And we learned that through this experiment we were part of in the last few months of 2020. And we're going to keep doing it, because it's a way to supplement the individual testing, which is really important. But this is a way to do kind of community testing. Even as the vaccinations kick in, it'll help us continue to monitor, make sure we're moving in the right direction. If there were to be a kind of a hot spot or a surge, we might see it in the wastewater before we would find it in other places or symptoms. So that's a good thing. It's a kind of an early warning system we'll keep using.
And that early warning system, if it's coming from a neighborhood, you knock on the door.
It's a good point. It is aggregate. We'll do it at the two wastewater plants, so that's covering half the city each. But then we may be doing it, as we're doing it now, in 8 different locations. Some of them may tell you it's on campus. For example, we have one that say, hey, we've just seen an eruption coming out of the dorms. That's significant. Some of them may be certain locations in the city. You don't knock on the doors, but you do. What it does tell you is, whoa, this virus is back. It's here again. and needs attention. And it's just a warning signal to watch out for that.
That's right. And we need to keep our eyes and ears on it. You will do so with your big meeting coming up. Well, your press conferences. Fridays, are we back on schedule for Fridays now?
Fridays at 1:15, yep.
Gotcha. So everybody make sure you tune in for that. The Zoom link is available at the city's website. Mr. Mayor, Happy New Year. Thank you for your time today, and we'll do it again next Tuesday.
See you next week. Y'all be safe and have a good week.